from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
And welcome to another week of the Howard Eskin podcast. Now, if you have found it and you are listening, you may know how to get it. And that would be going to iTunes and you look for the search for the Howard Eskin podcast, and then you can subscribe. And the subscriptions obviously do not cost anything, and you will be alerted as to when my podcast goes up each week. It's usually Tuesday in the evening is when the podcast goes up. All right, this week, we're talking mostly football. I say mostly football because Mike Lombardi joins us, and he is a big 76ers fan. He's a big fan of a lot of sports, big 76ers for those in Philadelphia, and really clarifies why this ridiculous, moronic process that was put into place didn't work. But we'll get to Mike Lombardi. But mostly, obviously, we're talking about football. Mike is really, really tied in as a former person in the front office, still has many, many, many contacts. Talk about players. He watches players. But we'll get to that. But first, Fran Duffy, who is the video content manager for the Philadelphia Eagles, and goes over tapes, and you'll hear him, and he runs down all the draft picks that the Eagles have, his thoughts, what he likes about them. Obviously, he's more pluses. He works for the Eagles digital network and the Eagles television network, but we talked about that. But he runs over all those things, and then I'll come back and I'll talk to you about Mike Lombardi. But there's one thing right off the top, and I want to get it off my chest, because there's many people that when they think of me or when they talk about me, and there's a lot of things they say, and they've been saying them for a lot of years, that I'm always negative. But when you say something positive, they rip you for that. It's almost nauseating to a point, because they formulate opinions and I have no idea why. And then when you say something positive, well, that's not good enough, because we think about it the other way. For instance, I'll just give you the positives. I think Pete McCannon is a good manager for the Phillies. People, for the most part, people agree. I think their general manager, Matt Klentak, is doing the right thing by building the team and not rushing into anything. And why sign a free agent who really can't help the team because the team's not good enough for at least a couple of years anyway. So that's a positive. But people now, they complain about Matt Klentak. I think Brett Brown is a good coach. I don't like what they did for past years, but I think he's a good coach. That's a positive. I think Brian Colangelo can do a really good job. And the last guy, when this would be a negative, Skam Hinkie, was a joke. It was an absolute joke. It was a Ponzi scheme. It was ridiculous. So that's the negative. As far as the Philadelphia, well, let's go into the Flyers. I'm not a big fan of the coach, Mr. Boredom, Dave Hextall, but I do like what Ron Hextall's doing in building the team and not rushing in and just signing people. So there's a lot of positives in what I've said. Here's another, a kind of a positive. I am not ready to criticize the Eagles head coach, Doug Peterson, for what he's not done in the eyes of people. I mean, there's people that just wail on him. And when they had when the Eagles had the draft, he wasn't involved. Same amount of questions to Doug Peterson as there were to Joe Douglas, the new personnel guy under Howie Roseman this year, after the final drafts were completed. Same amount of questions, 5 apiece. The rest were to Howie Roseman, saying he wasn't engaged in the press conference. I have a photograph, and nobody wants to, it's just the people that want to rip him. They just have this agenda. Hey, listen, we all have agendas at times. My agenda is not to tell you that Doug Peterson is a good coach, because we don't know that yet. I don't know that yet. I do think that he did a good job with Carson Wentz in really calling the right plays and putting him in the right situations. But these people that just wail on Doug Peterson, let him coach another season. He's had one season. And I love these people that bitch and complain and moan about play calling and why did he go for this on fourth down? And they look to specific games. I don't have the exact number from the Eagles, the exact number of offensive plays, but I can safely say it's over 1,200, probably well over 1,200. And people bitch about 4 to 6 plays that they didn't like that he called, that he went for it on fourth down. Out of over 1,200 plays, that's all you can find? Bill Belichick in the Super Bowl was an idiot for that onside kick. He's just lucky that Atlanta and Kyle Shanahan didn't do a good job of coaching and play calling for that offense in the second half. Because otherwise, that would have been a field goal, and that would have really made it difficult for New England to win the game. But that was stupid. It was somewhere in the first half of the third quarter that he onside kicked. There was a few years ago in a regular season game where the Eagles won in New England that Bill Belichick onside kicked when the Patriots were up 14-0, and the Eagles ended up scoring on that drive and then ended up winning the game. But nobody complained about Bill Belichick. Now, granted, Bill Belichick is a better coach than Doug Peterson. But Jason Garrett, how many people thought Jason Garrett was a good coach? And how many people actually think Jason Garrett is a good coach? Because they think he's a puppet. A good coach? They were ready to bury him. But all of a sudden, he got a quarterback that played out of his mind in Dak Prescott. He got a running back that did a really good job. And with that all, he had an offensive line that helped all those situations. How many people really think Jason Garrett's a good coach? But when you win 13 games, you're a good coach. The players win and the players lose. The only thing I'm saying for people that have this agenda about Doug Peterson, and it is an unbelievable agenda, that they want to, he's going to get fired. Well, if he doesn't have a good year, he may get fired. But can't we wait another year? Can't we wait with a rookie, after a season, his first season, when the rookie quarterback was named the starting quarterback, I think it was 8 days before the start of the season. Can't we wait to see what happens the second year? And why don't we wait? And during the season, we will have our opinions, both positive and negative. But I don't know how people can get on him and just have this agenda that he's not involved and trying to get him fired because why don't they like him? Does he not speak as much? He did say during the season more than Andy Reid ever said, but the media never liked Andy Reid and never gave him the credit. So with all that said, just give it a chance. Not give him a chance. Give the season a chance and see what he does. And if he doesn't do a good job, we will all talk about it. All right, let's take a look back at the draft and the things that the Eagles did and the things that were done around the NFL. And there were some stupid things done around the NFL. And there were some good points made by both the people that I have on this week. Let's start with Fran Duffy, who works for the Philadelphia Eagles, but has looked at a lot of tape and talks about the Eagles draft pick.
Okay, I'm talking to, and let me get your title right, Fran, the video content manager, is that correct?
That's right.
The Eagles Digital Network, can I say it that way?
Yeah, I think that's fair. The Eagles Network is probably the official title.
Okay, the Eagles Network. Now, Fran, you go over a lot of video during the season, and obviously the draft. I'm sure you were immersed in all that video. You were deeper than the front office people of NFL teams. But when you look, let's put it this way. How much video do you go over of the college players?
I would say hours upon hours upon hours. I don't even know if I could even put a number on it, honestly. But it's a lot of fun. It's a part of my job that I really enjoy, getting a chance to watch all these guys in college and see how their games project to the NFL. And for all the stuff that I produce during the football season for the Eagles and their upcoming opponents, it really helps to make that job easier because now I'm able to see, all right, well, this guy did X, Y, and Z in college. This is what he can do on Sundays now in the NFL, either for the Eagles or for their opponents.
So did Fran Duffy ever want to be a front office college scout?
I think there may have been a time in my life where I thought that was a possibility, and who knows down the road. But I love what I do now, and I love working with everybody. I work with the Eagles Network, and I really enjoy everything with the podcast and the TV show and everything that I produce and write. It's a great opportunity. I love every day of it.
Okay, where can people find the podcast? Let's tell people that now.
Sure. So you can subscribe to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. That's my podcast. You can find that on iTunes and anywhere you listen to podcasts. Also, the Journey to the Draft podcast, which is actually just wrapping up this week. That's on PhiladelphiaEagles.com and anywhere you can follow podcasts as well.
All right, so when you looked at all these players before the draft happened, now obviously we'll go over the players that the Eagles have taken. Did you identify yourself players that you thought, not that they may have taken, but that were really good that they could have taken?
Yeah, you know, you always look at it, and the way that I do it is I look at players not just from an Eagles scope, but from an NFL-wide scope and try and project, you know, can this guy play in the NFL in any number of schemes? Because obviously, you know, one player may be a great fit for the Eagles, but he may be a better fit for the Washington Redskins in a 3-4 scheme or, you know, something like that. So I always try and keep an eye towards the Eagles, but really it's a wide scope in terms of all 32 teams in the NFL.
Okay, we knew that the Eagles needed a defensive end. They needed a wide receiver, and they needed a running back, and they needed a cornerback. So when you started looking at all these things, and I'm sure you looked at the draft, and it really got screwed up once they started taking all those receivers. But when you started looking at it, did you identify Derek Barnett as a player, and what did you see from him?
Yeah, you know, I think when you look at Derek Barnett, it's so easy to see how his skill set translates to the NFL and mainly to the Eagles and the way that they play up front. You know, that attack nine scheme, that ability to get upfield and penetrate, he's got one of the best first steps in college football. And when you look at this draft, his ability to beat tackles off the snap was second to none, really, amongst these pass rushers. And that's really what makes him such a good fit. He's got the ability to win at the point of contact with offensive linemen, his ability to bend. And you can really see it. I did a breakdown with Chris Wilson, the defensive line coach. That went on PhiladelphiaEagles.com, and you could see in that breakdown the flexibility that he has in his lower half, at his ankles, at his knees, his ability to bend almost at a 45-degree angle and run the hoop on his way to the quarterback. It's rare to find guys that can do that at a high level.
Okay, you're going through the draft, and you see three wide receivers taken in the top 10. You see three quarterbacks taken in the top 12. And then you see Hassan Reddick go before. Now there's some players there left for the Eagles. Your anticipation of what they would have done?
Yeah, I think in that situation, Derek Barnett clearly was the best player on their board, and you can't fault them for that because he is an outstanding talent. Obviously, he's a great guy off the field. I know you've had a chance to speak with him as well. He's a great kid, and he's going to be a great fit on the field as well as off the field. So easy to see why they made that determination over a player, you know, like Jonathan Allen or any of these other players that were available that people wanted. The thing that always kind of flies under the radar with teams is they say, oh, well, you know, Jonathan Allen was considered by most experts as a top five pick. Well, for NFL teams, he wasn't a top five pick. Otherwise, he would have been a top five pick. And when you look at all 32 teams, all of those boards are going to look completely different from franchise to franchise. And I think that's, to me, that's what makes this process so unique and so special.
All right, we know that there were other issues with Dalvin Cook. But I get the sense that if Dalvin Cook had slid to the Eagles in the second round, he would have been the pick. Do you concur, not concur, and what'd you think of him as a player?
Yeah, that's tough to say without knowing exactly what the Eagles board was and what it looked like. You know, and if he did fall, you know, he could have been the pick. But when you watch him on film, I mean, you see a guy who is really explosive and has the ability to take it to the house at any given point. He can score from anywhere on the field. He can make an impact both in the run game as well as in the passing game. He wasn't moved around the formation as like a movable chess piece type, but was used on wheel routes, was used on the in the screen game. So he brings that added value. But then also, he does have some ability to run between the tackles, and he'll be a good fit in Minnesota. If he had fallen to 43, that's tough to say. I would say Howie Roseman and Joe Douglas, those guys would have been able to answer that better, whether or not he would have been the pick. Mm-hmm. But if he was the number one player on the board, no hesitation, I'm sure he would have been the pick.
Okay, so they take Sidney Jones. When he's healthy, and everybody anticipates he will be, whether it's sometime this season or next season, how good a cornerback is he?
There's a lot of people you talk to around the league that say he was the number one corner in this draft on the field. I mean, he's got outstanding ball skills. He's extremely physical. He's one of the more relentless corners that I studied in this draft, and his physicality both against the pass and against the run really stood out. And then also just his instincts in man coverage. I mean, his ability to read route breaks at the top of the receiver's stem and almost jump throws before the ball even left the quarterback's hand, I thought was really something that stood out to me. He was never a top shelf athlete like a Marshawn Lattimore who ran, you know, 4.39 at the combine or anything like that. His game was based on toughness, instincts, and ball skills. And to me, those three traits mm-hmm. are not going to be affected by a torn Achilles. So that's why I'm excited to see him come back.
Rasul Douglas now goes in the third round, a cornerback who people like him, and I don't know where he would fit in the grand scheme of things, but how did you look at him?
I think that, honestly, in any other draft, Rasul Douglas wouldn't have lasted to the 99th pick, and if he had run a little bit better at the combine, he wouldn't have been available at the 99th pick. I mean, he was a one-year starter at West Virginia, was extremely productive. I think he had 8 picks this year, was a first-team All-American in his first year as a starter. Really long, really physical, really instinctive for a guy that only played 1 year. But you really like what you see in his ability to find the football downfield. Howard, you've seen so many times corners that are unable to find the ball late. Yeah, right. You know, they turn back to the receiver and are unable to find the ball late. He shows the ability to do that at the college level, and that's really hard to teach.
All right. Intriguing are the fourth and fifth round picks in Mac Hollins and Donnell Pumphrey. But I hear special teams for Hollins. Give me your take on both those players.
You know, one of the things that stood out to me about Hollins right away is that he's got outstanding size. I mean, he's 6'4", he's over 215 pounds, but he's got 4.4 speed. I mean, he ran 4.5 flat, but I believe at the combine, he stumbled on the back end of that 40-yard
dash. So why don't they talk about him as a wide receiver more than special teams?
Well, he was a 4-year captain on special teams for North Carolina. He did it from day one. Was an outstanding player on coverage as a blocker all across the board on special teams. So I think really when you talk about him, right away, out of the box, he's a fourth receiver because of his impact on special teams, but he's got the athletic upside. Remember, he averaged over 22 yards a catch, was a great downfield threat for the Tar Heels at that size with that speed. So he's got the upside to reach, you know, the identity of a number two receiver on the outside.
And Donnell Pumphrey.
Pumphrey's really special because of his
but
quickness.
He's a little running
he's
back.
He's small. That's the one knock. I mean, if he was bigger, he wouldn't have gone in the fifth round. If he was bigger, he would have gone, you know, I'm sure day two in this draft. Really tough. You know, I watched him not just against some of that Mountain West competition, but against Cal in the Pac-12. And he ran for like 400 yards and 8 touchdowns in that game. I mean, no one could stop him that day against superior competition. He's tough. He's instinctive. He can impact the game in the passing game as a receiver as well. Was used all over the formation. He's really quick. He's really fun to watch.
Okay, let's talk about some of the late picks, which, you know, honestly, if people said they've seen the, I love people that say, well, I watched, you know, so-and-so. No, you didn't. I mean, especially San Diego. I love Merle Reese. Let's just throw Merle into the interview here. Merle, oh, he comes after me after they took Donnell Pumphrey. Oh, I love this guy so many times. Merle, you're staying up to 1 o'clock in the morning to watch San Diego State, but what can you tell us? I just had to throw Merle in there. What can you tell us about the late picks of the Eagles.
I think when you look at Shelton Gibson from West Virginia, he's got two traits that you can't teach. And number one is his speed. He only ran 4.5 at the combine, but everyone thought he was going to be faster than that. And if you look at him on tape, he is faster than 4.5. But then also his ability to track the deep ball. And you were here with DeSean Jackson. You know, how special his ability to track the deep ball was. And that's really kind of what set him apart from some of these other speed guys. Shelton Gibson can do those two things. He needs some refinement elsewhere, but when you have those two traits to hang your hat on, that's a good place to start.
Do you tend to look at speed more than anything else? Because obviously you have to have skills, but speed, you can't coach speed.
Yep.
Do you kind of give a guy a little bit of more of a plus if he's got the speed?
Do you remember the Philly kid that came out last year from Notre Dame, Will Fuller?
Yes.
He was a straight speed guy. He got drafted in the first round, and I think his speed elevated him to first round. I think when you looked at him as a player, though, he wasn't a great player yet. He, you know, he had a lot of drops. He wasn't a great route runner. Whenever you have that speed, though, it's always going to elevate you, and because, like you said, you can't teach it. So if you can refine other areas, you would expect that he'll be able to reach that ceiling. And people thought that about John Ross as well. John Ross is a very skilled player. That's why Will Fuller went in the 20s and John Ross went top 10, even with the injuries. But Shelton Gibson, you've got that ability to track the deep ball, and that's not really easily coached either. I mean, you've got the ability to look it in over your shoulder. That's a special call.
All right. Their last pick, Qualls. When a guy is taken in the sixth round, you say, well, you know, how's he going to make the team? But does he have a good chance to make the team?
I think he's going to be really interesting because you're talking about a kid who 5 years ago was a high school running back, ran for 1,200 yards, nearly 300 pounds. Now he's 330. He played all over the formation for Washington. They had a bunch of injuries in the front seven late in the year. So there were times when he was a defensive end. He was a nose tackle. He was a three technique like Fletcher Cox. He was moved around standing up and blitzing from different spots in the formation. So his versatility, his motor is really, really fun to watch. He makes plays sideline to sideline. So talking about a big kid with light feet who can move, that's hard to find. When I watched him, I thought he would be a third-round talent, and he went in the sixth round. So great value for the Eagles.
All right, an undrafted free agent the Eagles signed was Corey Clement, and people expected he would have been drafted somewhere. Why wasn't he, but how good can he be?
Well, obviously, since it's not announced yet, don't really. But I'm going off. We're going off the report.
I talked to his dad.
Yeah, right. Okay, so there you go. But Corey Clement. I mean, a lot of people thought. Look, there were 30 running backs drafted this year. It was an extremely deep class. The last time 30 backs went in the draft was 1991, mm-hmm. and there were 12 rounds in that draft. So it just speaks to the depth of this class. When you look at Corey Clement, 220 pounds, good athlete. He had some injury issues during his college career, and he'd shared some time, so the production wasn't always there. But physical gifts are absolutely there as a player that I thought was a draftable prospect.
All right. Well, there's got to be a running back out there somewhere that's a three-down back that somewhere will come into camp. Do you think it will be a player that's cut or a player that's still sitting out there?
That's what's going to be interesting. I'll be very anxious to see what Joe Douglas and Howie Roseman and their whole staff are able to do.
Doug Peterson, since people don't have love for Doug Peterson.
Yeah, of course, right. Exactly right. But what their whole staff is able to do in terms of finding talent and able to supplement the roster. We've got a couple months now before camp. It's going to be really interesting to see how the battle and the competition goes in the summer.
Okay, Fran. Thank you.
All right, Howard. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Some good insight from Fran Duffy about the players. It's really interesting that the intriguing guys to me, and now Sidney Jones, even if he doesn't play this year, it was a good pick. Rasul Douglas seems like, by all accounts, and Mike Lombardi is going to talk about it too, all accounts is good. But there are a lot of people that like Mack Hollins, the wide receiver who really is a special teams guy in the eyes of many people. He's 6'4", he's got some speed, yet they talk about him in special teams. That's an intriguing player. Donnell Pumphrey, a little guy that, and we'll see what he does too. We will see. But really, when it really comes down to it, we can look at these draft picks. They've got to go out and do it. And just remember, you can't always judge a draft pick by his first year, as we found out with Brandon Graham. So is Derek Barnett good? Well, let's hear what Mike Lombardi, who really is tied into the NFL and really that has been his job for many years to evaluate players. So let's hear. And Mike's got some really, really interesting stuff. We talk about the Eagles, some of the Eagles picks. We talk about what went on during the draft in the NFL. And then we get into a little 76er stuff, which he's really a big fan. And obviously he knows how a front office should be run. And he had some strong comments about the way the 76er did it. So let's listen right now to Mike Lombardi. Joining me now, who I think is a genius when it comes to football, and that would be Mike Lombardi. Mike has had so many good positions in the NFL. I just want to kind of let people know that, Mike, but welcome. I appreciate it.
Well, it's nice of you to call me that, but you call everybody a genius, so I'm not sure really if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Well, it's good when I mean it. And I mean it. All right. So here, let's start with the NFL. And I love watching television and love listening to all these people that are all experts that can't see half the amount and go through half the amount that teams go through. Now, some teams don't do it well enough and some teams do. But all this great stuff. Let's just say, which teams do you think did a good job and which teams do you not think did as good a job?
You know, everybody loves this 49er draft. And for me, I mean, Reuben Foster could easily be a guy who's a medical for them. And then they pick C.J. Beathard in the third round, which to me was a complete stretch. I never saw it. I like Seattle's draft. It hasn't been talked about much, but I think Seattle went back to their roots. They helped their secondary. They got some defensive tackles that could help them. They've got guys that could play in the back end. So I thought Seattle did a nice job. I thought Washington did a really good job. They get two starters in the defense right away, Jonathan Allen and Fabian Moreau. Now, Moreau broke his pec, but I think he's a really good player. Perrine, the running back from Oklahoma, I think he comes in and helps them. He gives them a legitimate big-time back. And Ryan Anderson is a second-rounder, gives them a guy that can rush off the corner. I liked Washington's draft a lot. I thought they were really good with what they did. And then, like Green Bay, I thought Green Bay did a decent job with where they were. I thought they've got running backs that could come in and help them. Aaron Jones, I thought, was a steal in the fifth round. Jamal Williams, another running back. Both those guys would have been huge stars on their team last year. So, you know, when you go over it, it's so subjective. People grade drafts, Howard, because they grade the draft based on how they like the players that were drafted, you know. And so if you don't like Marlon Humphrey, you're not going to give Baltimore a high grade. If you don't like Zay Jones, you wouldn't give Buffalo a high grade. So it's, and then you've got to look at the free agents that they sign and guys that could come in and help make the team. So it's more than just one grade and one player and all that.
Well, okay, so now let's look at the teams that didn't do a good job. And I don't know if I would put Chicago in there, but they got completely swindled because San Francisco still got the player they wanted at three. But is that a poor job by them, or in the end did they get the players they needed?
Well, I think they obviously valued Trubisky. I think Chicago's offseason planning leaves a little bit of question. You know, if you're going to give Glennon $15 million a year for 2 years, why would you take Trubisky? I mean, you don't have enough faith in your evaluation on Glennon, but they like Trubisky. And at the end of the day, whatever they paid for Trubisky, if Trubisky's a really good player, I'm not a Trubisky fan. I think 13 games wasn't enough to see him. But just let's say Trubisky's a really good player. Nobody's going to question what they did. It really comes down to how Trubisky plays. And I think that's really what they're hoping on. And they're hoping that those 13 games, you know, were what he can do. They're hoping that even though the level of comp, when he got behind in games, his numbers went down. You know, he's Mr. Ohio coming out of Mentor. He doesn't go to Ohio State. He goes to North Carolina, has a hard time starting on that team. They call it political reasons. But for whatever it is, he didn't play until his senior year. So you're banking on some things that you're really not sure of, and you hope you're right.
Well, and the quarterback class this year, in your judgment, was it good? Was it average? What was the quarterback class as far as what their NFL career will be, look like to you?
I think it was good, Howard. I think Watson will be a good player, and Mahomes is going to be a developmental player. I wasn't in love with Trubisky, but I could see the value of it. And then, you know, Davis Webb, I thought – Joshua Dobbs could be a potential down-the-line player. I wasn't a Kaiser fan whatsoever. He's too inaccurate. He's all over the place with the ball. He stares down receivers. He had no anticipation in terms of his throws. To me, quarterbacks that can anticipate are really what you have to have. I thought Watson could anticipate. It's an instinctive position. So my sense of it is, look, Bill Walsh used to say this all the time. We don't need 12 great quarterbacks. We just need one. And there was enough in this draft to make teams happy. I thought Andy Reid saw the guy he liked and went after him.
Yeah, and it's funny because John Gruden, and John would never tell you this when he does those quarterback camps, but I talked to some people that worked with him doing those camps. He really liked Mahomes. I guess what his future could be. And he didn't like the guy he liked the least. It's funny that you hit on it. DeShone Kizer, I could tell when something he said when I watched on TV, and then I checked with somebody that worked with him, he said he didn't like him a little bit, DeShone Kizer. Obviously, there's some problems there.
Yeah, John's not a great poker player. When you watch John do those seminars, you can tell who he likes and who he doesn't like. I think he was concerned about Deshaun Watson's handling the verbiage of the offense and spitting it out, which is a natural concern because, look, let's face it, guys are not used to talking about, you know, they don't call plays in college football anymore. They just hit, they look at their wrist pad and they call out number 7 and everybody's got a wrist pad on. And I think John was concerned about whether the communication aspect for Watson was going to be successful. But you could see from watching some of those that John had some guys he liked and some guys he didn't. He's not a real good card player.
All right, so now all these guys and more, there's a ton of guys that declared early. And 28 of the players don't get drafted. How much of is it bad advice? Why do these guys declare if there's really questions on whether they're going to get into the NFL?
Well, I think sometimes guys declare because they have no choice but to declare.
Oh, okay.
I mean, maybe they were going to funk out of school. We don't know the situation on a lot of guys, but perhaps maybe that's what happened. They were not going to be able to stay in school, so they decided to declare to come out anyway. And I think that that's what maybe happened. But look, you know, I mean, sometimes guys, it's hard to predict what they think, and you just have to go by, you know, what you think you can do. I would recommend kids staying in school as much as they possibly could, but you know how it goes, Howard. It's tough to talk kids into staying in school when they don't want to be in school.
All right. So now here, and I know you work with Bill Belichick, and obviously, like many people, respect him. He's made 20 draft day trades moving up, 22 draft day trades moving down, and 21 draft day trades involving players. It seems like, and you could tell, he didn't make a pick until late. Why does he make so many moves?
Well, because of the way his board, the way he grades, and the way he sets things up, it's he's not in love with any one player. That's the part everybody misses. There's no one player on the board that he sits in his office and says, I got to have this guy, like most teams do. You know, his is about making sure he's getting the best value for his pick, making sure he's bringing somebody in his locker room that represents the things he wants to represent. And if he's not able to pick that guy at the spot he wants to pick him, then he's going to trade away from him. Rarely does he trade up. Now, this year he did because he needed to go get a left tackle, and the left tackle board was so depleted, he traded up to get Garcia. So I think that's why you saw that. But for the most part, I mean, really, you know, he doesn't fall in love with anybody. He just basically sits back and looks at it and says, you know what? Here's what I'm thinking about. Here's what I would do. And I go out, and this is the player I'm going to pick.
Okay, you mentioned the Buffalo Bills, and we didn't get into it. They fire everybody after the draft. Now, I know you don't want to fire them before, I assume, because you don't want them taking whatever information they got to other teams. But how do you let all those people make your draft picks when you know you're going to fire them?
Well, I don't think they did, Howard. I think that those guys had input into it, but I'm not sure all those guys made their draft picks. I think some of those guys were involved with the draft, but not all of them. And their reports were there, and they kept their rights until the final day. And then they let them go. So they didn't want those guys talking about other things to other people and having all their information out on the street. So by holding their contracts, by holding them tightly.
All right. So now let's go on to the Cleveland Browns. Do you like what they did? And here's a team that never gets it right. Do you like what they did?
Look, I like Myles Garrett. I think it's really good. I think he's a good player. I was not a Peppers fan whatsoever. I think Peppers is the guy who's like, and I've said this on my podcast, GM Street on the Ringer Network. I think Peppers is a guy that is like the typical guy that you buy an expensive watch, but every time he wants to check out what time it is, he looks at his phone. He's a guy that, you know, can do a lot of things, but he's an accessory part. He's not a safety. He's not a linebacker. Have one interception in his career. He's got to play in the box. He can't really go out and adjust. High recruited player coming out of high school. If you really study the Michigan tape and you really understand what they're doing defensively, they're doing everything to protect Peppers, not highlight Peppers. And I have trouble watching players like that. But, you know, look, everybody thinks, well, Lombardi, you don't like Cleveland because you were there. No, look, there's some of the – Cody Kessler in the third round last year I thought was a bad pick. I think Kaiser in the second round this year was a bad pick. But, I mean, that's Cleveland, and they'll keep doing what they do.
You know, I was talking to Warren Sapp last week, and I know he says things that are crazy and outrageous and stupid, but he was one guy that didn't like Garrett because he said he takes off too many plays. Do you agree with that?
I think you could make that observation. I don't agree that he takes them all off. I think oftentimes he had a bad ankle. I think he got a bad rap. I could see what Warren was trying to talk about. I get it. I think there's some situations you got to dig a little deeper. He had a bad ankle. There's some times he does take plays off. And most defensive linemen I've evaluated in my career have. I mean, they said the same thing about Julius Peppers coming out. He's been in 9 Pro Bowls, you know, and so. I think you got to look at it. How much does he love football? You got to be concerned about it. You know, you got to worry about it. I mean, but the one thing about this draft that I would say was different than any other position was he was the one guy that most people agreed was the best player in the draft.
All right. So they take in the sixth round a defensive tackle, Caleb Brantley. They know that he has an incident with a fight. And then the general manager comes on after the draft and said, well, if we find out that that what he was accused of is true, he's gone. Well, why would you not go deep into investigating and checking all that stuff up before you make that pick?
This I can't answer. I mean, to me, to just blow a sixth-round pick when you're a team that needs everybody. Remember last year, only one of their picks didn't make their team, Scooby Wright. All their picks from the fifth round on made their team. They love to keep their draft picks. Mm. So it's surprising that they did that. Obviously, they wanted to retain his rights. But there's some, you know, all you needed to do was before the, I mean, this wasn't something, I was at the University of Florida 3 weeks ago, and this was something that happened down there then. And all you needed to do was talk to people, yeah. Go down there, send your scout down there. He would know it. And basically, you know, you could then get more into it. And I think that, look, let's face it. It's one of those things where you got to before you turn the card in, you better know the player before you turn them in. The worst thing in scouting, and this violates every rule of scouting, is to learn more about the players after you pick them than before you pick them. And that's what Cleveland's doing here.
Well, Oakland apparently did that too with Conley. They didn't even check with the police, I was told, didn't even check with the police to find out what happened in his situation. And then they start checking after they pick him. Is that truly amazing to you that they would do something like that?
You know, yeah, I think it is. I think it's, you know, look, all you need to do is make a phone call to find out about the situation. The evidence is going to be presented to the sex crime unit of the Cleveland police is handling it, and they'll talk to you about what the evidence is. And I know there's some teams that have actually did more than that, so it's surprising.
All right, so now let's get into the Eagles, and I want to get into character as well, because obviously it's more of an issue now, but not enough of an issue with some teams. You looked at the Eagles draft. What do you think?
Look, I like Derek Barnett. I think he's a really good player. Plays hard. He can rush. He was a tireless player in terms of they didn't really rotate him. He wasn't always fresh for a lot of plays during games. I thought he's a really good player. He plays hard. He's tough to block. He can impact. You're not going to formation him off the field. He can play, and especially in a wide nine in Schwartz's scheme, I think he's really good. I think the Eagles have added two good players, in Barnett and Jernigan, that give them some depth. I think when you watch their team last year, their depth in their defensive line wore down as the season went on, and that's why they weren't as effective defensively. And I think this really helps. I think the second round pick, Sidney
Jones, right?
I thought he was really good. I think, look, you can't worry about whether he can play or not. You know, Jones is going to be able to play in 2018. Whether he plays in 17 is not the matter of importance. I think it's going to be really important that he's healthy and he comes back and plays. They got a first-round talent in 2018. This guy's a really good player. He'll recover from the Achilles. The last thing you want to do is rush him and try to force him back in there. Douglas is a corner, you know, from a division that, you know, with the Southwest, the Big 12 now is nothing but a pillow fight. I mean, the AAC got more players drafted than what we know as the Southwest Conference or the Big 12. So it's a passing league. It's not a real physical. I thought Douglas was a good cover corner. Doesn't have the burning speed, but I thought he was great corner. Not a great corner. I thought he was a good corner. The guy I really liked was Matt Collins in the fourth. I think he's a really good special teamer. He can vertically run down the field. He's tough as can be. He'll make plays. And then Pumphrey, there's really no comparison for Pumphrey for Pumphrey because he's an undersized guy that carried the ball a lot. You know, he's not a big guy. He's a little guy, but he plays bigger than his size, and he's been very productive at San Diego State. So, look, I think the Eagles got some pieces for them. I think it helped their team, especially in the defensive front, and I think in the secondary.
All right, so, you know, when you look at being in the front office, and this is what people in this town, you know how people in this town get crazy in Philadelphia, that they didn't get a running back that's like a three-down guy. But is it easier to get a running back when everything kind of sorts itself out and teams can't keep all those players? When you were in a front office, did you notice that there would be running backs out there before you get to the regular season?
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, running back, there was a lot of backs. Green Bay picked a back in the fifth round, Aaron Jones, that I thought was a really good player. I think he's got a chance to be a potential starter. They picked another, the 49ers picked a back from Utah, Joe Williams, that I think could be. There's backs around there. You just got to know exactly what you're looking for in the back.
So teams will cut players, though, right? And there'll be a back that you could use.
Oh, yeah, I mean, teams will cut some backs. But, look, if you're waiting for a team to cut a good back, you're going to be waiting a while, you know? I think that the talented backs keep their jobs. The ones that kind of keep bouncing around, there's something wrong. And ultimately, what you really want is a guy that can impact the game where you don't take him off because of what you're trying to get done. Those are the best backs. When you can run your spread stuff and he can handle protections, or when you want to run the ball inside the tackles, he can handle that. Because what you want to do with defense is you want to make them have to substitute, not make you have to substitute to get to what you want.
All right, Corey Clement was not drafted, and the Eagles ended up signing him as an undrafted free agent. Number one, why wasn't he drafted? And number two, what do you think of him?
Well, I think he got hurt this year, you know, and the kid that played behind him was a really good player. He ended up signing a free agent contract with the Houston Texans, Dar, and I can't pronounce his last name, but he was a really good change of direction player. Clement's a little bit of a vertical, what I call a point of entry back. You got to feed him into the hole and get him going. And I think because of his injuries, because of his durability issues there, you know, Wisconsin always has backs that produce, and I think you have to look a little bit deeper. I actually like the other back better at Wisconsin, the one that signed at Houston at the Texans.
All right, so now character. It's probably worse now than it was when you were helping with all these things in the front office. Is that an important thing to most teams now?
It's the reason guys make it or don't make it. It's the intestinal fortitude. It's the will to want to do it. It's the ability. You have to understand what the millennial generation is all about. You can't just assume that they're going to be like the way you were when you were growing up. I think things traumatically change, so you've got to have a better understanding of what's going on. And I think you got to really indoctrinate yourself within the culture that's going on with these kids today and understand how important football is. And then character is not necessarily guys that don't misbehave. I think when you're into the issue of domestic violence, that's a whole separate issue in terms of character. I'm talking about a guy who may get a DUI or a guy get test positive for marijuana. Those are the things you have to look at and understand that those are part of our generational thing that happens. And whether it was a one-time thing or a second time, and you got to handle that. When you're into the other things, whether it's the felonies or stuff like that, then that becomes another issue of character that you've got to define, and you have to have a tolerance whether you want to do it. Me personally, I think domestic violence, you take the guy off the board. However, that being said, some teams, like the Cincinnati Bengals, are going to discuss those players, and I think that each player is unique, but you also better know what you're getting. What I told you earlier is the most important thing. You better know more about the player before you draft him than after you draft him.
So it sounds like, and you've already made that point, Joe Mixon would not have been drafted if you were in a front office.
No, I just think, to me, you're asking yourself, would you send the message to your locker room that this is something you're going to tolerate? And I don't think you can tolerate that.
When a guy's borderline, Reuben Foster's got because people in town think, oh, yeah, how come the Eagles couldn't get Reuben Foster? Between injuries and off-field, what would your opinion be of Reuben Foster?
Reuben Reuben Foster, I think the 49ers are really lucky. They're sitting there talking about how fortunate they are to get Reuben Foster at 31 when they would have picked him at 3. I think they're making themselves look bad by making that statement. If they would have picked him at 3, they would have regretted that. His shoulders are not very good. Most teams rejected him medically. I tweeted this out about 2 weeks before the draft that he was slipping out of the first round, and I took a lot of crap on Twitter for it, and he probably should have slipped out of the first round. He's got a rotator cuff injury that he had done. Not sure it's done correctly by the procedure he went through. And then he also has a torn labrum that had to get done. So he's got the shoulders. Then he's got the off the field issues that you got to feel comfortable with, that you got to feel he can handle in a big city. Part of what you're doing too, Howard, when you're bringing guys in from other places, you got to see, can they be adaptive to your culture? Can they be adaptive to your city? You know, can they assimilate within the community and feel like you can get a good handle on them? And I think the Reuben Foster thing, there was a lot of red flags medically and character-wise that you had to be concerned. But at the end of the day, the medical was the driving force on Reuben Foster. Those shoulders were not very comforting. And the 3 concussions in college also make it very discomforting, because now you start putting up concussions, and the next one he gets in pro football, you go back to it and it becomes problematic.
All right, just tell people, since you mentioned Twitter, and I should have mentioned it earlier, M. Lombardi NFL. That's M. Lombardi NFL. All right, we've done the football, and I can't let you go because we share the same opinion. And my son does a podcast. It's called The Rights to Ricky Sanchez, where he just goes overboard. He still has a love affair with Scam Hinkie. And you have your opinions, but I want to share it with people again so people understand that I'm not the only person that thinks he's a lunatic when it comes to Hinkie and what he did.
I think, you know, and I read him, I follow him on Twitter, I admire it. Look, if you want to support something that you don't, if you believe something strongly, the only way to really believe it is to listen to the opposite side of you, okay? And so I follow Spike. Of that. I follow him because he's always going to, somehow it's always going to intertwine that Hinkie's the reason why we're so good. When we've blown more picks than we know what to do with, and my biggest issue with the 76ers are, you know, it's a Belichickian thing. You don't, you know, it's one thing to collect assets. It's another thing to build a team. We're building a team. So we trade Nolan's Noel for basically nothing. They're going to dump Okafor for basically nothing. Call up Colangelo and see how successful he's having trying to get rid of Okafor. He can't get anything for him. No. Okay? And then you look at the Michael Carter Williams. Now, Spike would say, well, we turned that into this Laker pick that turned out to be really good. But what I think everybody misses is, and this is what I talk about, picks become players. And if the players aren't any good, no matter how many assets you accumulate, you can't get there. And after 4 years of losing, Brett Brown has the hardest job in sports, is to convince a winning culture you're going to turn it around. And now they're on this clock. Ben Simmons didn't play this year. You know, every time I turn around, I read Twitter, there's always a 76er guy who's out for 6 weeks. He's got hemorrhoids. I mean, I've never seen anything like it in my life. Like, if you want to beat a champion, you got to have the mental fortitude to compete at a championship level. And they give guys off for having a cough. I mean, they sit guys down. Everybody's on a clock. The sports scientists have taken over the 76ers, and at the end of the day, we have to build a team that has a real competitive nature. Look, San Antonio rests their older players. That doesn't mean every guy that has a little minor tweak is going to sit on the bench. So for me, it's just completely – and look, I'm still a Sixer fan. I'm rooting for them. I hope they get it. But if we don't get the 2 lottery balls this year, then what happens next year?
Yeah, exactly right. Well, let me just tell you, their sports science guy is a doctor in zoology. So he's from Australia. He's a zoologist. I mean, let's just break that down to its simplest form.
Every time I turn around, everybody's hurt. Everybody's sitting down. Look, I can rest players. Just take the day off. Put, you know, Ben Simmons is on a shot count. Embiid's on a shot count. Well, you know, look, you got to put together a team that can win to put everybody on a count. Like, that's not how it works. I'm all for keeping players healthy and have a long career. So I think that's really important. But I'm also for building a mentally tough team that can win and find ways to win come playoff time. And if anybody in their right mind thinks that that's what they're doing in Philly, they've never seen what a championship team looks like.
And here, I'll give you some fuel for your fire. Okay, so Michael Carter-Williams is picked 11 that year. The Greek Freak Milwaukee, who's going to be an unbelievable stud, was picked at 15. Now, it's not my job or anybody else's job to say, well, nobody knew that he was going to be that good. Well, it was Sam Hinkie's responsibility to sort those kind of people out. So you get the Greek Freak. If you get Embiid, who I don't think will ever play more than 45 games a year, and you get Porzingis instead of Okafor, you might have a good team. But
have a good team.
Yeah.
That's my point. Is like, to me, I'm with you on the Greek Freak, and you know, and we all sit there. But to me, the one that was the worst was Porzingis. I mean, that's everything they want.
No, it's just
everything they want. And so when you passed on him because you said the kid didn't want to play, well, then when you open your mouth and say that because he didn't want to come to Philly because of the, then you're basically saying the culture cost you that player.
It's amazing in this town, and there's still a lot of hinkyites, sons
but
of scam, as I call
them. Learn, Howard, I think the one thing to learn from all this, and I think that not enough sports teams do it, I think if you explain what your plan is to the fans and you tell them what you're doing, I think you'll get fans to buy in. I think most, and that's the one thing I've learned from the Henke administration, is if you're honest and tell people what you think, you'll get some people to buy in. Now, I don't buy into it. I still root for the team. I think it's completely wrong. I'm with you. I keep searching around the NBA. I hear all this rhetoric from your son and from everybody. You have to be in the first five picks in the draft to build a good team. Okay, then I turn on my television, and there's the Greek Freak. And then I watch DeAndre Jordan, and I watch the kid from France, Rudy Gobert, and then I watch the, you know, Kawhi Leonard. I watch all these other players, Isaiah Thomas in the second round, right?
Yep.
Jimmy Butler at the bottom of the first round. Like, when does somebody write the article that says, you know what, if you know what you're doing and you can evaluate talent, which it takes talent to evaluate talent, you can build a good team.
Well, Greenwood, San Francisco was in the second round, too.
There you go. There's another one right there. So, but everybody says, well, you have to have a top five pick to get him. Meanwhile, the top five picks are not playing, and Green's still playing. That's what I just don't understand.
All right, one more question, and it's a football question. Best player available. Is that always what you would do when you pick when you draft a player?
It's a hard thing to do. It really is. It's the lesson that you have to do because if you take your depth chart into the draft room, you're only going to screw it up. Because remember this, the draft, the 2017 draft, is more for the 2018 team than you realize. And that's really the most important thing. So what your 2018 depth chart looks like, you don't know. So you have to draft for your best player. You have to pick the guy that could impact and hopefully help your team in 18, 19, 20, as opposed to filling a need. Because you can fill the need. What happens if you need it again? I mean, look, the Sixers filled their need at center. They still need a center. You know, Okafor's going to be gone. Embiid's still there. They filled their needs. Did that work?
No, and I'm not sure it's going to work in the future with the players that have been drafted previously. Hey, it's always fun, Mike. I really enjoy whether it's doing it and putting it on the air or whether it's doing it and just shooting you know what. But it's fun, and I've learned a lot. And obviously, you've got some pretty good insight to a lot of things, and I appreciate it. And it's M. Lombardi NFL. On Twitter.
Right, and then I have a podcast, GM Street on the Ringer, that people can listen to me spout off on all this stuff.
Okay, GM Street on the Ringer?
GM Street on the Ringer Podcast Networks.
Oh, okay. All right, got it. Thanks Mike.
Thanks, Howard.
And no, thank
Bye-bye.
You. Take care. Bye-bye. Some really fascinating comments. I think they're fascinating because Mike Lombardi puts some perspective on the 76ers. Think what you want, say what you want about what you think about the process and, you know, the people that live and die by what Sam Hinkie did. He's gone. Let's forget about him. He screwed it up for a lot of years, didn't make a lot of good picks, made a lot of mistakes, but people won't accept that. It was a Ponzi scheme, but I'm glad that I asked Mike Lombardi about that because he really did, I think he put some good perspective on it. He also put some really, really good perspective on some of the draft picks. He really likes, as you hear, Sidney Jones. He's really going to be a good player once he gets healthy. And I think we all want high draft picks to play as soon as possible. But sometimes you don't get those. And don't compare it to the 76ers. The 76ers did that for years just so they could back up losing. The Eagles do it to build, knowing the Eagles are not going to go to a Super Bowl this year. And there's another thing that I'd really like to talk about. I think the NBA is a broken product. I think the NBA is so out of whack with what's good, and it just comes down, and it's different. I know in the NFL you have the Patriots and then a lot of other teams. But you have other teams that can win, that really can win Super Bowls. Atlanta should have won that Super Bowl if Kyle Shanahan hadn't screwed that up. Atlanta lost it. The Patriots didn't win it. But I like to compare the NBA and the NHL. And I realize, and the people with the argument, well, the NHL doesn't have any ratings. I get it. I'm not a big fan of the NHL, not a fan at all of the NHL regular season, because there's too many bad games. The rules, I think, are foolish and stupid. You win or you lose. You don't have an overtime win and an overtime loss. You don't have that. That's just not the way. That's not the way it works, and that's not the way it should work. If you lose, you don't get a point. If you win, you get 2 points. I think that's foolish by the NHL. We can debate whether the shootout's good, but these NHL playoffs are so much better than the NBA. It is absolutely ridiculous. They're all close. So many games have gone into overtime. They're intense. It is action from beginning to end and even in the overtimes. It is so much better. And again, I'm not a big NHL hockey guy in terms of enjoying the regular season. But I do know that the NHL playoffs are so much better than the NBA. All the NBA, most of them are blowouts. It is a joke that in the first game in the second round that Houston beat San Antonio at San Antonio by 27 points. We're leading by 30 points at halftime. San Antonio scores 39 while Houston had 69. It is the NBA playoffs are not competitive. They're not close. It's just, and the underdog wins once in a while, which is okay. I have no problem with that. But I just wanted to make a comparison between the two. The NBA is a broken product. They've got to do something with teams that the players build their own teams and not the organizations. There's a lot of things that need to be done, but I wanted to get that off my chest. And there's some things each week on our podcast that I will get off my chest, and this is one of them. And again, don't say I'm an NHL fan, but I know they're so much better than the NBA playoffs. How many people watched the second half of that first game of San Antonio and Houston? It's really a joke when a team in the NBA playoffs only scores only 15 points, and that's happened a few times. So if you have anything that you'd like me to discuss on these podcasts, feel free to let me know. And at my Twitter address, and my Twitter address is at Howard Eskin. And you can let me know anything you'd like me to discuss, and I will mark it down, and I will discuss it, and we will talk about it. But I think we covered a lot this week on the NFL, covered a lot on the draft, and the draft is always so interesting to people. And it's amazing to me that the draft is so big for people, and they watch it. And the draft would beat the NBA, and maybe it has at times. But there are really people fascinated by all these players. So I wanted to touch on that this week. We'll have some many, many interesting guests, and we'll do that down the line. The Howard Eskin Podcast, and that's how you can find it. Go to iTunes and search for the Howard Eskin Podcast, and you can subscribe, obviously free of charge, and it will let you know every time that I post a new podcast. Everybody, we'll do another one next week. Everybody have a great week, and hope you enjoyed it. And again, if you have any questions or want me to discuss anything, feel free to tweet at me at Howard Eskin, and we will discuss it, good, bad, or indifferent. Everybody have a good week, and I'll see you next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. Hey, I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about the
bathroom? Like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything taken care of.
It took forever. And the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.